Good morning. Such is the nature of life that all it asks and all it wants is the opportunity to appear. You are that opportunity and so am I. It is the purpose of this wonderful teaching of ours to keep us ever aware of this, the central truth of our being. My name's David Barrett. I'm a minister with Centers for Spiritual Living up here. Reverend Marilyn Odom, also a minister as well. What you guys are doing is getting old church today. For those of you that don't know, we started the church, it was actually in 2011, meeting on my back porch, pulling together people. Marilyn was there, I was there, Vance was there. There was a big group of us that were sitting on the porch saying, okay, we're going to start in 2012, we're going to start this center. And so we were behind the scenes in growing this center. So when I say old church, you don't see us too much around here anymore, but here we are today, both of us up here on stage, so I want to welcome all of you. This is a great teaching. This is a place where you can learn to think correctly and change your life if you want to. There's this power greater than we are that's ready to work through us. We just need to allow it to work through us. So part of my talk today is going to be talking about that. So I just want to share with you my growth process and where I've been, how I grew through the center. And also, too, I always want to share with you, I wear you guys on my sleeve. I want to share with you where I am as of this moment with my spirituality. So I'm going to share that with you. So, but for the time being, we're going to go with an affirmation and a reading from Reverend Marilyn Odom.
We'll stand and do our declaration.
Thank you. Our declaration of principle. I believe in one God, one absolute power, and first cause to all things. I believe that this power is perfect love, and it creates out of a desire to express love. I believe all thought is creative, and how I choose to think creates my personal experience. I believe in the unity of all life and the immortality of the individual soul forever unfolding. I believe in the eternal goodness, the eternal loving kindness, and the eternal givingness of God to all. And so it is, and please be seated. Thanks. Marilyn.
Good morning. It is good to be here. I haven't been in a while. I guess it's been a year. I think I was only in Atlanta for maybe 2 or 3 days at Christmas, so I didn't get to see you all. But for those of you who don't know, I've been out in Claremont, California, a beautiful, beautiful suburb, kind of L.A., attending Claremont School of Theology. And if you want to know, if I'm already a minister, I have like 2 ministerial licenses, why do I want to go to theology school? It was for greater learning, greater expansion, and to meet other people who love this whole concept, not of religion, but of God, and this experience of God. And in meeting other people in all other denominations, we have Methodists, we have Episcopalians, we have Muslims from all over the world, I am able to introduce religious science to people that have never heard of it. And our concepts of it, and they're very open and very receptive, and they're asking questions. Our whole idea of God is one, as opposed to no duality. Our idea of God as an it instead of a he. That was really mind-opening for them. So a lot of them have started using that. So I have one more year out there. I'll graduate in May 2020, and then we'll see where the road leads after that. So what I prepared for you today is from this book. Don't know how many of you. It's called This Thing Called Life by Ernest Holmes, the founder of religious science. It was written in 1943, but it's still very relevant today. And Ernest says, there is a universal wholeness seeking expression through everything. I don't know if this is on. We are calling it simply life. Is this on?
Yep. Mm-hmm. It was.
Now it is again.
Yes.
Okay. There is a universal wholeness seeking expression through everything. We are calling it simply life. The religionist calls it God. The philosopher calls it reality. Life is infinite energy coupled with limitless creative imagination. It is the invisible essence and substance of every visible form. Its nature is goodness, truth, wisdom, and beauty, as well as energy and imagination. Our highest satisfaction comes from a sense of conscious union with this invisible life. All human endeavor is an attempt to get back to this first principle, to find such an inward wholeness that all sense of fear, doubt, and uncertainty vanishes. The science of mind is merely one of the tools we use in giving expression to the life principle. Our greatest satisfaction lies not in the fact that we can use this principle, but in the realization that such a power exists and that we are one with it. So let us start with the simple proposition that life, which is spirit or intelligence, is the sole and only creative agency in the universe. This life principle always existed and will always continue to exist. You are part of this self-expression. Therefore, the whole desire of life is to give you more life. And since it is all life, it has all life to give to you. It loves you because in creating you, it has given some part of itself to you. You are dear to life, beloved by it. In creating you, it has poured itself into you. You could not ask for greater love than this, and more love could not be given. So if you would take the time daily to sense the presence of life within you, to believe in it, to accept it, it will not be long before the life which you have known will gradually disappear and something new will be born, a bigger, better, and more perfect you. You will pass from death into life, from lack and want into greater freedom, from fear into faith. From a sense of being alone, you will pass into a realization of oneness with everything, and you will rejoice in this oneness. You do not have to beseech life for it to be good and for it to bring good into your life. Life is like the sun. It shines on everything. Open the windows of your mind. Open the doors of your soul. Lift up your thought and let life be to you whatever you wish it to be. Learn to resurrect yourself. You have the power. So it is. Now let us prepare for our time of spiritual mind treatment. As you get comfortable and being receptive and open, I'm going to say this in the first person, but you're to take it in for yourself, the same as the writings that I've just read you from Ernest Holmes. And this treatment is, I affirm life. I affirm life. Knowing that everything in my life is created and sustained by the power and presence of universal spirit, I allow this infinite power of divinity to permeate me, fill me, and flow through me, spilling over as the very essence of life. It is who I am. From this place of unity, I easily, peacefully, and knowingly embrace life-affirming choices. I allow into my consciousness only that which totally supports my highest God nature, refusing to entertain anything less than the very best of life. All my thoughts, decisions, and actions are in perfect alignment with my purpose of expressing as my highest and best in all areas of my living. As I make life-affirming choices, I joyously welcome the magnificent results manifesting as abiding peace, opulent prosperity, unconditional love, optimal health, and unlimited creativity. I rejoice as my wise choices unfold in ways that are visible in my world of effect. Gratefully releasing this truth to divine mind, I relax into accepting that it is now manifest as the deepest reality of my being. I affirm life. I affirm life. And so it is.
Seconds. My watch is going off. I wanted you to have silence for 30 seconds. Exactly what Marilyn was talking about with that thing called life. But in those 30 seconds, were we thinking about this thing called life, or were we thinking about David and what's going on with him? This is an awkward moment. Did he forget his talk? What's going on? So I love summertime and the living is easy. Bob called me about a month ago saying, hey, can I fill in while he's out at the youth church gathering out in California? I said, I'd be love to speak with you. And he's like, immediately, what's your talk title? And it's like, you're just asking me to speak. Let me think about it. But he didn't give me a chance. And I said, summertime and the living is easy. I am going to end my talk with the law of living easy. If you're not living easy now, I'm going to show you how you can get there and use that law in your life. So there was a great minister once who gave a talk on summertime and the living is easy. And he talked about that song. And he said it's just a song of abundance because, you know, it sits there and it talks about your daddy's rich, your mama's good looking, the fish are jumping, the cotton is high. It is nothing but a spiritual mind treatment saying how abundant we all are with all of that going on. So that was back then when that minister gave that talk. But anyway, I want to give you a little bit of a talk on the journey that I've been on for 29 and a half years. Here I am. I walked into a Center for Spiritual Living Church, or back then it was called Atlanta Church of Religious Science, in 1990. So for 29 and a half years, I've been in this teaching. And the reason I came to this church is because somebody said, you need to go to that church where all the good-looking people go. And I was like, okay, I think I want to go to that church. That was in October. It took me until a New Year's resolution in January of 1990 to set foot through the door because I was all about the good-looking people, but I was not anything about church. I didn't want to have to do the church. But I walked in that first January Sunday morning in 1990, and the minister gave a talk. I can't tell you what all the talk was about. I know it was about religious science and things, but something in here was stirred saying, I don't know what he's talking about, but it sure does resonate in here. That's what I want to hear. So that's what happened in January of 1990. 3 months later, he gave a talk on St. Patrick's Day, and he was all talking about Ireland and the famine and growing the potatoes, and he pointed right at me, and he said, David, you can do better than that. So how many of you been to a church service where the minister was only speaking to you? You could have been the only one sitting there in the audience. So here Kennedy Schultz is pointing at me. David, you can do better than that. He wasn't saying David. He was just saying that the people at the time of Ireland, they could have gotten a bigger idea about life because life was doing nothing but trying to show up for them, but they weren't using that their minds in the correct way. And so it's like, you can do better than that. You can get a better idea about the potatoes and why we've gotten here with this famine that we have there. So he pointed right at me. That was in March, so I'm starting to grow up a little bit in the teaching, and I was really excited that, okay, I can do better than this. I want you to know, when I walked through these church doors, I was living at the law of averages. I had an average life. Good things happened to me, bad things happened to me. And I was just living at the law of averages. It was like, okay, that's all that I knew. But here I was, only 30 years old, but that's what I thought I needed to be doing. It's like society was telling me that, oh, David, you need to go to college. David, you need to go to law school. David, you need to do better than what your parents have done. David, you need to do this. And you listen to all of that. You listen to society. And I was trying my hardest to live to society, what society was telling me how to live. And so when somebody points at you and says, you can do better than that, I was like, okay, that's good. But how does that happen? How does that happen? So then it was in May. This happened really quick. I'm having these spiritual awakenings that I can do better than that. And I go to a church conference in California called Asilomar. And it was an absolutely wonderful place. I went there 14 years in a row because it's a spectacular conference of all the Centers for Spiritual Living in the United States and actually internationally. And actually, there's one next month if you want to go in August. I didn't want to go to the church conference. Again, I'm still afraid of church. But if there's all these good-looking people in the Atlanta church, imagine what the national conference is going to be like. So still living in the world of effect, thinking, oh, it's the good-looking people that I'm all about and not necessarily anything to do in here. So Sunday night it opens up. David Walker is the speaker there. He was the minister of the Los Angeles church. And if you've ever been there, Merrill Hall is an old wooden barn. And when David Walker finished speaking, they were stomping their feet. That barn was just a shaking because he was one of the best speakers that religious science had at the time. And so I just sat there just going, what is going on here? I couldn't believe it. And so what happens at Asilomar is you go through classes and they give talks in the morning, then you break out and you do conferences during the day, and then they do more talks in the evening. So you just have overload of Centers for Spiritual Living talks and positive thinking talks and everything. So Sunday night, they're stamping and doing all of that. I go to the things on Monday. I go to the things on Tuesday. Tuesday night, David's orchestrating. We're going to get wood. We're going to go have a bonfire on the beach in California. That's what you're supposed to do in California. And so I pulled all that together, but David didn't show up after he made sure everybody did that. David was sitting in his room in tears, because what I was hearing was, you can do better than that. Use this thing called life and let it flow through you and come out into this greater understanding. So Wednesday morning, I went to the talks again, and Dr. Frank Richelieu from the Redondo Beach Church was up there speaking, and he's like, everyone in here, pull out your key. Pull out a key. Hold it up. You hold the key. You hold the key, as he's saying to me. And I pull out my key. I hold the key. I was a mess, only because there was a huge spiritual awakening happening in that 5-month period that my life can be better than where I was in January of 1990 until May of 1990. Big things were happening in there. So you go and sit with people and eat with other people all the time at Asilomar, and everybody's like, yeah, what class are you in? What class are you taking, David? And I was like, classes? They have classes in this? And so, anyway, are you in 100? Are you 200? Are you at 300? I was like, I'm not at anything. So they said, you need to go back, and your minister back there in Atlanta is one of the best ministers in religious science, and you need to start taking classes with that minister. So that was in May. They didn't have classes in the summer, but once fall started, I started taking classes, and I took classes for many years, in the teens of years, with that. I just never stopped with that. So that was from a student from 1990 and also up to a teacher through 2017. So all of those years, 27 years of being a student and teaching and coming together, learning how to live an above average life and moving into this law of cause and effect, because they were saying move above this law of averages and start using this law of cause and effect. Put these ideas in your mind that and cause that come out into this world of effect. And so I started doing that and my life was changing. It was changing quickly. By 1996, I graduated from the practitioner class. It didn't take me 6 years. I didn't have to repeat. You can actually do it in 3 or 4 years. But it was just by the time I was working and everything, I could do it in 6 years, and I became a practitioner. But I remember speaking with somebody a little bit later that became a practitioner after me, and they said, David, you know what's happened ever since I became a practitioner is I have tripled my income since I started class and became a practitioner. And so I started doing the math and went back in that time period. By the time I started taking classes and became a practitioner, I too had tripled my income. I let go of the law of averages and stepped into this law of cause and effect, and my life was changing. It was changing. So that was really good. All of this teaching was in my head. I was speaking to Gary a little bit earlier, just saying I'm a very mental person. How do I come up with this teaching? If some of you have been to some other spiritual living centers, they do a lot of hugging, a lot of swaying, a lot of singing. They come from the heart to get to center. But the church that I came from the head to get to center. You end up in the same place. But I couldn't have gotten there any other way than coming from my head to get to center. And you can come from your heart to get to center. You end up at the same place. So it was in 1997-98 that I had the courage to put this to use in my life. It was in February of 1998 that I decided I was going to leave the law firm I was at, because you can do better than that. You can do better than that. So in 98, I left that law firm. Also in 98, in April of 98, I started dating someone that I'm happily married to now, 21 and a half years later, because I used this teaching and showing how that. I was at the law of averages. I'd be in relationships and out of them. I was in this personal injury law firm, and it was just eating at my soul to be a personal injury attorney. So I knew something had to change in here. So finally, I get into 2000, and I become a minister, and it was really wonderful. I graduated, and as I'm standing there at graduation, I get message that Paul Gagné has already said that I could be one of the staff ministers at the Atlanta Church, and I was so excited to become a staff minister in 2000. I did midweek services. For those of you know that I did Tuesday on my mind, because I'm all about using your mind, this law of cause and effect, how do you get this change in life happening? So I was doing Tuesday on my mind, how to use your mind to change your life. Then that was for like 7 or 8 years, 9 years. Finally, I went to Paul saying, I need to do something different. I need to start teaching classes. So then I moved into the classroom, and I remember I was just talking to Sylvia. I was doing not the regular religious science classes. It's like, I want to do Emma Curtis Hopkins. I want to bring in some of these teachers that you haven't heard for, but they're all New Thought teachers. And just as Sylvia said, we were elevated walking out of that class every night, coming to this teaching that we're chiming in to this thing called life and using it. And finally, I ended up teaching a practitioner class, and it was really wonderful. And for those of you that know, when you finally teach a class at a level of teaching the practitioner classes, it's the students that teach you versus you teaching the students. It was really spectacular. But during those 2 years that I was teaching that practitioner class, at the same night, Dr. Joyce Reynolds, I don't know if you know Joyce, she was teaching classes too on scripting and special other classes all the time. But we would have 5 minutes every night to sit on the couch before class. And those 5 minutes were tremendous. Those 5 minutes sitting on the couch with her was sitting in this thing called life. We just sat there and just talked and shared. But this is where my next huge growth occurred spiritually, was sitting on the couch with Joyce Reynolds. And she said, David, you're living in mental law, you know. You should move up to spiritual law. And David gets defensive. I use spiritual law. I know spiritual law. And I go home and I lay in bed and I go, what the heck was she talking about? I used other words, but what the heck was she talking about? At the same time, still the ever-hungry student, I was taking metaphysical Bible classes over at Hillside with Dr. Rocco Errico. You know, I've got to learn how to take so many different things on this thing called life. How do you do it? And you're never going to believe this, but I was in the law firm once, and I'm gathering my things because you have to get out to see Rocco, and it's all the way across town, and I'm running out of the law firm, and I got my books, and I go, I got to go. I got to get to Bible class. And I stopped and was like, those words just came out of my mouth about the Bible, because what I had learned all along about the Bible was not good things. And here I was saying, I got to get to Bible class. So today, I actually have a Bible quote for you guys. Don't go running for the doors. I've got a really good metaphysical interpretation for you on that. Then a big year was 2010, 2012, when we decided to start the Center for Spiritual Living. The center I had learned so much from, moving in the direction of using the law of cause and effect in a different way. I was very clear then that it was the power of mind that changed your life, not holding hands, not lying on the crystal bed. I was very clear. So that's why we started this center, because we knew it was the power of mind that changed your life. You don't need those things. That was the teaching that both Paul and I were very clear on, and we wanted to make sure there was a center that was clear on this power, so that's why we're sitting here today. But Joyce said she had learned from Joel Goldsmith, and I remember taking one class on Joel Goldsmith, Practicing the Presence, and it was like, okay, it was just moving the mind. It was really along the line of mental law. But at the same time, I was reading the Science of Mind magazine every morning for my affirmations. And 1 month, the minister there used quotations from Joel Goldsmith every single day from a book called Consciousness in Transition. They were wonderful quotes. I didn't know what they were, but they really spoke in here. Once again, I don't know what's happening, but it sure resonates here. When I went to order the book out of print, it's going to be 5 months before you can get one. But that is the very first book that led me into using spiritual law. Not just doing the seven-step treatment in mental law, but how do you use spiritual law? Spiritual law gets you to stop thinking about you. Spiritual law, and I've shared this with you before, about going to the metaphysical Bible teaching of I am and learning the I am and bringing all of that in. But here, Joel Goldsmith was saying, drop the am, David. Drop the am. Just go to I. Just go to God. That's all you need to do. Don't bring up the David part. But I went kicking and screaming because you know why? I like the David part. You know, he's good looking, he's smart, he's got all this going on. I like the David part. Don't tell me to forget about the David part. But what they were trying to show me was there was this huge spiritual law at your disposal. That you can use. And along those lines, somebody else said the same thing that David said, and it was Stradivarius. You know, Stradivarius is that violin maker that makes all these great violins. And so somebody was talking to Stradivarius and said, oh, you must be really touched by God or spirit in order for you to make such wonderful violins. And he was very clear to respond and said, you can't have a Stradivarius without Stradivarius. Okay, what does that mean? I really like that. So I wasn't quite ready to let go of David, for David can't be a David without David. So what are these things that we're talking about? I'm thinking they're two different things. And Goldsmith was telling me to let go of that. Sit in the eye, he says. Sit in the eye. And then I finally got it. Joyce Reynolds was a speaker at church one Sunday, and she said, oh, you should have seen the traffic. There was an accident on 75 when I was driving down from Woodstock. And you know, you got to pay attention to the traffic, and then you got to pay attention. They've got all these billboards that are coming at you and everything. But I decided to stop for 1 second and look beyond all that. I looked at the trees on the other side of the billboards. And I looked up at the sky, and I looked there. And she said, what I noticed at that point was grace. Grace. So I had to think about that a little bit, that all of this world of effects stuff was going on with the traffic and accident, making her late to come to the church and everything like that. But she said, I noticed grace. So here's my growth, guys. You see, from the law of averages, moving into the law of cause and effect, which has a lot of mental law in it, moving into the spiritual law of just chiming into the I of me, the God of me, the universalness of me, moving into there. And now Joyce is saying, move up even higher, David, to this level of grace. Just lie in that I. Lie in that I. Just stay right there. So I've been reading lots of different people all along that were saying, go to the nothingness, go to the emptiness, go to the quiet, go to the stillness. Meister Eckhart was a really hard book for me to read when you read all the stories of Meister Eckhart, who's a 14th century monk. And I just didn't understand it, and I just didn't understand it. But again, the same thing, something's resonating here while I'm reading Meister Eckhart of just coming to center, come to quiet, come to nothingness, come to emptiness. So while reading some of that, did I come across yet another 14th century monk's book? And he's anonymous. He was an English monk, and he wrote a book called The Cloud of Unknowing. The Cloud of Unknowing. So I picked up that book and started reading that, and it really started bringing the Christian teaching into the same thing as this letting go of the I of me, the am of me, letting go of all of that. And so that's where I want to let you know where I'm at today, is going into the quiet, going into the stillness, going into the unknowing, because it's all understanding this thing called God, and I don't want to use that God word, because I remember when I first came in with Kennedy Schultz, and Kennedy would go 3 or 4 weeks without using the G word, the God word, but, you know, about 4 weeks later, he would come on and he'd talk about God, and I was like, dang it, you just had a great talk going, and you just ruined it. So it had nothing to do with him, and everything to do with me and my definition of that word. So I had to grow in that definition of that word, and what did God mean? God was such a charged word, and so I've let go of that. So I want to read a Bible passage first, just so you can understand the cloud of unknowing. So when I pull out the Bible, please don't go running. It's only one paragraph. It's one paragraph. You can hold on for me with one paragraph, and it has to do with Martha and Mary. And so when you see this, I'm going to pull a lot of these things together, and you're going to see how this works. So it's Luke 10:38, and it says, now as they went on their way, he entered a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. So Jesus was out and about, and he comes into the home of Martha, and Martha welcomes him in. She had a sister named Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to what he was saying. But Martha was distracted by her many tasks. So what Martha's doing is she's preparing food. She's like, okay, we have guests in. We're running around the kitchen. We're preparing food. And here is Mary sitting at the feet of Jesus, not lifting a finger. And I don't think it's right. So Martha was distracted by her many tasks. So she came to him and asked, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her then to come help me. But the Lord answered her, Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted by many things. There is need of only one thing. Mary has chosen the best part, which will not be taken away from her. So when you go to metaphysical Bible teaching, if you've taken a class with me, you clearly understand when you talk about Martha and Mary, there are not two people there. There are two aspects of your individuality there. So when they talk about Martha, they talk about Mary, it's not the two people. So it's two aspects of me. So this is the two aspects of us. We have the Martha, Martha, the active, I got to do this, I got to do that. I've got an appointment on Monday morning. Actually, Monday's going to be a busy day for me, and I'm going to do that. Does anybody have that in their life? The Martha? Okay. What about the Mary aspect, which is let's just sit at the Lord's feet. Let's just sit at the Lord's feet. So how do you bring those two things together? It's really interesting. We have both of those things within us, all those things we need to do, but also, too, what do we need to bring together? And so that's why I want to read a little bit of The Cloud of Unknowing, this anonymous monk that wrote this in 1400s, and he explains what's going on with this, and then you're going to see exactly what's going on. And it's like the correct interpretation of the gospel text, Mary has chosen the best part. What is the meaning of Mary has chosen the best? Wherever the best is declared or named, it demands that two things should precede it, a good and a better, in order that itself may be the best, the third in number. What are these three good things of which Mary chose the best? Three lives they are not, for the Holy Church only takes into account of two, the active life and the contemplative life. These two lives are allegorically understood in this gospel story of these two sisters, Martha and Mary. By Martha, the active, Mary, the contemplative, outside of these two lives, no man can be saved. Outside of these two lives, no man can be saved. But though there are only two lives, yet in these two, there are three parts, each one better than the other. For as we have said, the first part consists in good and honest corporal works. This is the first degree of an active life, as was noted above. And this is the average life. This is where we're going. The second part of these two lives consists in good spiritual meditations. Let's sit at the Lord's feet. So one is about sitting there with the passion of Christ, the joys of heaven. The other is the action. The first part is good, but the second part is better. For this is the second degree of the active life and the first of the contemplative life. In this past, the contemplative life and the active life are joined together in spiritual relationship. So when you see these two are being joined, this is the third person. You have the active life. You have the sit at the Lord's feet life, but when these two are joined, do you start having the better life? The best life is when those two are joined. They are made sisters after the example of Martha and Mary. Those two things come together as sisters. An active may progress in the contemplation only so far, and a contemplative can only descend only so far. The third part of these two lives stands in the dark cloud of unknowing, with many secret impulses of love toward God himself. The first part is good, the second is better, but the third is best of all when you marry those two things. So let the voice of our Lord cry to these actives as if he were speaking now to them on our behalf as he did for Mary to Martha. Martha, Martha, says Luke. And this monk interprets it, active, busy you now as best you can in the first part and in the second, now in the one, now in the other, and if you so desire and feel yourself so disposed in both at once. So the third is the best. It's when you bring those two together. So that's where I'm at right now with my life, is truly trying to forget about the active part of my life. Also, too, not just the meditative part, because I get up at 4:30 in the morning and I do my meditations every 4:30 before I go off to the office. If I don't do that, I sure notice the difference during the day. But it's putting those two together. It's the action part and the meditative part. That's the best. That is the best when you put those two together and you can live your life like that. That's what I'm studying the silence. Goldsmith wrote a book called Thunder in the Silence, when you can get those two together and just understand the silence. So using the teaching last year and on my 20th anniversary in my relationship with moving above the law of averages to the law of cause and effect and moving into spiritual law to living in this law of grace, now living in this life of unknowing, not defining God, just experiencing it. So I did an anniversary ride last year, and it was Seine River cruise, on biking all throughout the French countryside and things like that. And one of the things was to go to Van Gogh's last city where he was at for 70 days and where he's buried at. But anyway, Van Gogh kind of had it right there. There was a movie in 2018 that was released called At Eternity's Gate. And it was a film about Vincent. Van Gogh was played by Willem Dafoe. And when he asked, why do you paint? And Van Gogh responded, to stop thinking. So to let the mind go away. So today, I ask you to stop thinking. Stop looking at the world around you and compare and try to fit into society and try to do all that. Stop looking at that. Recognize the Mary and the Martha aspect of yourself and know it's not just the Martha aspect of you to do and to do and to do, and not just the Mary aspect of you to sit there on a mountaintop and contemplate. You've got to bring those two together. Martha, Martha, active, active. I want you to catch yourself when you are in the Martha, Martha stage and marry yourself to those two together to say, let me come to the best part. The best part is pulling those two things together. Read another book, Douglas Harding's On Having No Head. He was so funny. He says, I do not experience myself crammed into an 8-inch ball. So I do not experience myself crammed into an 8-inch ball. Read The Myth of the Great Secret by Joseph Campbell. Read Goldsmith, Thunder in the Silence, when you start getting to the best part of you. So now I want to go back to 30 seconds of silence, and I want you to see the difference between that first 30 seconds and this last. So that's where you have your summertime and you've moved into the law of living easy. It is wonderful, and so are you, and so it is. So let's take this in for a moment and just, what did we hear about all these different laws and how we're living our lives? And none of them are either good nor bad. It's just the recognition of how we live in all of those. So we come together in this knowingness of this great universal life, this thing called God, this thing called life. It is just waiting for us to express it. It's waiting for us to come together and say, yes, there is a David. Yes, there is a Monica way of living, a Martha way of living, and a Mary way of living. There is a way of living that best life now, but it's married to the sister of this contemplation and touching this spiritual law, this universal law, this thing called the Lord. Let's sit at the Lord's feet and understand what that means for us. For when we start pulling all of that together, we start moving out of the law of averages and our life gets better. Not only do we move ourselves into new careers and new love lives and also two and triple our incomes, this is using all of that and marrying those two and putting the sisters together in your life and living that life right now. It is this thing called life. It's just waiting for our recognition to support us in this new desires that we have, this greater understanding. Whenever we come up with this idea that we can do better than that, there's always something behind us and a law that's supporting us and moving us in that direction. What I let go of is the smaller ideas about myself, and I'm the only one in this whole world having to make all this happen because that's not the truth of me. The truth of me is this greater understanding of this law, this universal intelligence, this spirit, this silence that we can grab onto at any time in our day, any time, and make sure it's present in our life. We then come up with that silence, sitting at the feet of the Lord and understanding that we just take our next step that comes to us. That's the universal intelligence coming through each one of us to say, if that is what you're putting out there to the universe provides. It is given. And so we take those steps and we move to the next one and we move to the next one. This is a reason for thanksgiving. This is a reason for saying great thanks, that it's not just David out there trying to do all of this, or each one of ourselves out there trying to do it, that there is a law greater than each one of us out there that's ready to support us and move us in the direction of a greater expression of life. This is the thing called life. This is the thing called each one of you and your universal, your individual aspect of that universal law. This is the truth for each one of us. I release this law to the law of the universe, knowing that it acts through each one of us in our own unique ways, and so it is. Great. So now we come to the time where we do support the center. There's a lot of us that you give on a monthly basis and things like that, but also too, we still do a collection, mainly because this law of value given, value received. The center offers up for huge opportunity to grow. Like I've shared with you, the 29 and a half years of growth that I've gone through and where I sit now, all because of this teaching. I don't think I would be alive today if it weren't for this teaching. So that's the value that this center offers for each one of us. So as the ushers come down, let us go ahead and say our affirmation for prosperity. It's on the back of your card. And truly use this as your Martha and Mary. Marry the two and understand what it means. I live in a universe of abundance. As I freely and joyfully give, I join in the divine flow. And all that I share with life returns to me, multiplied abundantly, and so it is. Thanks. Just a couple of announcements. Next week, Reverend Angela will be speaking. She was one of the original ministers here as well. And they're actually having a celebration of Reverend Angela. She's actually going to be doing a whole lot more speaking at the Douglasville Center for Spiritual Living. So we're kind of having a reception for her next week. So be back and see Reverend Angela and have that reception with her. And then after that, Reverend Bob will be back. So thank you for coming. I love that you're here. I love seeing a lot of the faces. And if you're new, I hope I shared with you just a couple of bits of wisdom that you can walk out of here and use in your life, because your life can be changed just by changing the thinking that you're using right now. So thank you for being here. Let us all go ahead and stand and say our affirmation of life. I leave this place now knowing something better than I knew before. I go forth into the world with a heart full of love and a mind full of good sense. I look at the world in a greater way, knowing that I have within me everything I need to create the life I desire. I give thanks for this understanding, and I am grateful for the spirit of life that lives through me, and so it is. And have a great week.